Everybody, welcome to the Friday Filibuster, back after 2 weeks sabbatical. I am Dave Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre, who's going to tell us, what did you do on your sabbatical?
What did I do? Actually, I was on somebody else's podcast.
Yeah,
I know. I was bad. I was on the Roundtable podcast at roundtablepodcast.com.
Nice.
To talk about my upcoming book, Act 4, Scene 1.
Very, very exciting. You've been getting some movement on that, right?
I've been doing a ton of work on it, yeah.
Good, good. Oh, was it what was the other podcast like?
It was interesting. It was they do alternate takes of stuff, which we don't do here. And so lots of show prep.
Oh, lots of show. So it's not like a bit called alternate takes. They actually do.
No, they do like take one, take two.
Take two. They actually do bit, yes. And I got you. And show prep. Wow.
Yes.
I know.
We had to do like a conference call before the show to get things set up. And
wow.
So it was a whole big production.
That must have been foreign for you.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was good though. I had a good time.
Because we are thinking of changing the name from Friday Filibuster to Show Prep Blows. We'll see. All right, good. Eric Escherslager, you were doing some interesting things during your sabbatical.
Sure. I've been dying mostly.
Yes, but dying.
No, I got hit hard with an illness that seemed to morph every few days. I think
your doctor mentioned that you were kind of unique, correct?
Well, after a solid week of not really being able to get out of bed a whole lot, I went to the doctor because I was having some ear problems.
Ah.
And got diagnosed with the worst ear infection he'd ever seen.
That's somehow.
Which I went back a week later because my ear still didn't feel right, and then I found out that I had actually blown out my eardrum or perforated my eardrum.
Oh, yeah. Oh God.
But that's healing. I can almost hear normally now. So I'm except for an occasional hacking cough, which I will try to minimize with the mute button as much as possible. I'm at 90%. So I'm getting back.
Sounds like it's pretty sucky.
Yeah, pretty much everything anyone had over the winter that I didn't get before, I got kind of all at once, which is probably an okay way to do it rather than dragging it out. It is, you know. Yeah.
All right. Daryl Loomis, what'd you do on your sabbatical?
Let's see, not a lot. I've been working hard on this comic book script that I've been working on for years now.
Wow.
And the first issue is just about done, so I'm trying to get as much of the script as possible done before we start marketing it.
Wow, exciting.
Yeah, well, we'll see how exciting it really is, but it's a pain in the butt to write a comic book script. I will say that much. It's a lot of description, and a page of my story, my original story, runs sometimes 8 to 10, 12 pages of comic book pages, and that's a lot. That's a lot of minutia.
Nice.
So, yeah. Wow.
All right. Let's see. Speaking of minutiae, we've just been unpacking. We did a move, which was 3 weeks on the heel of a birth of a second child, so that's kind of why we've been off the grid for a couple weeks. So still unpacking stuff, sorting mountains of DVDs and Blu-rays and shipping a bunch of that off to Goodwill. I think I may have donated the first ever Blu-ray to Goodwill. You know?
Really?
Wow. Possible. 7 days in Utopia. That's in Goodwill right now. So I feel pretty good about that. But
I still get excited when I see like a VHS tape at the thrift store. It's like, oh, they're catching up.
Yeah, that's right. So it's been a lot of day-to-day stuff. So I haven't really been able to get out and see any movies, which will transition us into what we've been doing in those last couple weeks entertainment-wise. Mac?
Yeah, well, you know, it's April is kind of the lull of the entertainment world because everybody's gearing up for, you know, the big movie blockbusters in May and May sweeps on TV. So April is just entertainment with its hands in its pockets standing in the corner. But for me, I've been catching up on Game of Thrones in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
I picked up the season 2 Blu-rays, went through all of those, and I just finished reading the third book, Storm of Swords. So I'm all pumped for the new episodes now. Really enjoying it. Although, once again, I got to say that for people who haven't read the books and are watching the show, I don't know how they can follow it, because I would have been totally lost if I hadn't read the books first.
Really? Yeah. I mean, credit to the writers. I'm following. I mean, I'm with them, so they did a good job, because it is an insane amount. In fact, I love the show. My only criticism is, as we've gone on, more and more characters have been added. So,
right.
Like, when you look at when an episode is done and you look at the narrative progression each story arc has taken that episode, it's like a millimeter, you know? 5 minutes of screen time, and that's it for that character. So, I mean, it's like, I could follow everything. That's great, but there's just so much that it's like each episode should be 2 hours long instead of one.
Yeah, but I'll say that the TV show is like perfectly cast, you know, because the characters on the show, they're very much like they are on the page. So it's they definitely do a good job with it.
Nice. All right, Eric?
Not really many movies. I've been watching a lot of TV on Netflix because it's easy and disposable. I've actually been rewatching a lot of Kids in the Hall episodes. I caught here and there on Mustang Comedy Central, you know, growing up in high school and stuff when they were showing the reruns. But yeah, I'm went through all of season 2 and 3, and I'm starting on season 4 now. I forgot how great that show is, and just like how talented those guys are. Not only not only at you know being funny, which they are, but kind of creating these characters that aren't just like one-dimensional SNL catchphrase characters.
Yeah, okay. Especially when you look at the SNL of the time when they were doing the same stock characters week in and week out and the same jokes. Kids in the Hall was really a class above.
Yeah, I mean, you have characters which are great, like the I'm Crushing Your Head guy, which is kind of a one-note thing, but they use it sparingly, and it's always funny. It never outstays its welcome. They do a great job kind of keeping sketches tight when they need to be tight, letting them go longer if they want to be longer, mixing up with, filmed segments, things that are just kind of bizarre and aren't really necessarily even funny in a traditional sense, and just doing kind of classic sketch character work of letting, you know, two or three characters just have a scene together and the jokes come out of it, but it's not like there's a big punchline at the end or something. So really, really enjoying that. Also in the sketch comedy, you know, tip, I guess the kids say, I watched through season 1 of Kroll Show, which wrapped up recently.
How Nick is Kroll. That?
It's... I liked it. I think Nick Kroll is very funny. I think his characters are very good. I wasn't quite sure what to expect watching the show, and it has a very unique feel in sketch shows that I think is a little off-putting at first, because it's essentially it's him doing his characters, and there are a lot of recurring characters, and the whole thing is sort of structured like mini segments from almost fake reality TV shows that star his characters. It's not quite that, you know, rigid, but it's almost like watching, you know, E, except everything's fake. You know, and there are other things he throws in too. There's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of hidden details. If you watch the whole thing, you see callbacks, and it's kind of hard to describe. I definitely enjoyed it. And I recommend it. People check it out. Just don't go expecting it to be like Saturday Night Live or Key and Peele or Kids in the Hall or The State or something like that. It is its own kind of, again, character-driven thing. So,
'cause I really like him on The League, if you ever watch that show, but his stand-up act, which is mostly his characters, never really rang with me. So I wonder if maybe I wouldn't like the show as a result of that.
It's possible. I first encountered him through the podcast. Now it's a TV show too. Comedy Bang Bang, which is a funny podcast. If you like comedy, check it out. And he'd come on and just do these characters. And there's a lot of people who come on and do characters on that show. But I didn't know him. I didn't know who he was for a long time. I only knew Bobby Bottle Service and El Chupacabra and these characters that he has. And I loved him when he was on. At some point I caught part of his stand-up act. I think it's a little different when he's doing it on stage. Mm-hmm. The show is a little bit more in line with, you know, what he did on that podcast, because it's not, you know, it's not him on a stage. It's him in character, in context. There's one bit he does on one show where he's Bobby Bottle Service as a ghost hunter. which is funny, and there's a lot of other things.
I'll give it a shot.
He's the douche in Parks and Rec.
He's the douche, and he's also the German in Community.
I saw him in the league. Yeah. It was funny in the league, and he did the voice for Life and Times of Tin as well. So
He's talented.
He shows up in a lot of good places.
Yeah, he's good. I'm glad that the show got picked up for a second season. So look forward to checking that out too.
Very good, Daryl.
TV for me mostly two. Although one movie that I'll talk about real briefly that I saw the other day was Safety Not Guaranteed.
Yeah, pretty good movie.
I really, really liked that, and I'm not generally one who's going to recommend indie romantic comedies.
Yeah, it's a hip indie romantic comedy.
it's not generally my bag, but I got taken up really well with it, and part of it's the cast that I think is really excellent. But I think the whole thing, the writing's really good, and the sentiment of it, I think, is really good. But other than that, the Walking Dead finale on Sunday, which I finally gotten caught up completely on, and that was okay, although I feel like it's, as the years have gone on, the show's gotten cheaper in the effects and the writing and the whole bit. I just think it's gotten cheaper. But not so with the return of Doctor Who, which I thought was fantastic on Saturday night.
I don't. Anyone here watch Doctor Who besides Daryl? Mac, you?
I'm a big fan, but I don't get BBC America, so I wait till they show up online or on disc.
It's the new companion has a lot of promise. She's very charming, has a lot of promise, and it looks like they're setting up for a single. I mean, obviously they're going to be doing episodes the way they normally do, but there's a sort of overlying plot line that's going to go over it, like what they did with River Song previously. That I'm very intrigued by, so I'm looking forward to it as it goes on.
Nice. I got TV to report as well. I've been watching and enjoying greatly Vikings on the History Channel. Legitimately liking it. It's a nicely done show. I think it's history's first foray into a legit series. And
is it fiction or non?
Yeah, it's fiction. Yeah, it's not a documentary. It's like any TV series you would see. Obviously grounded in the historical fiction stuff. I'm just kind of a sucker for that time period. In fact, it's like taking place right during the time period of my favorite historical fiction books I've talked about before on this podcast. Kind of the Vikings and their incursion into the Saxon lands, pre-England stuff. And, it's pretty cool. I'm into it. They're doing a good job with it, so. Only recognizable name there, Gabriel Byrne, is in it as the chief Viking who has it out for our hero Viking. But I don't know. I recommend it. It's taken some cool turns. There's some tension between the main guy and his brother, who's in love with his wife. And then on a raid, the main Viking guy took back a monk as a slave. But he's been kind of like becoming part of the family, so that's kind of interesting too. So good stuff. It's not corny, and it could be so easy to make that, the shields and the swords and the Viking boats look corny, but they do a good job with it. Because speaking of corny, and we'll get into this when we talk about our what we've been reviewing, History Channel also put out a Vikings documentary to coincide with it, and there's a Viking special hosted by Richard Karn, and it is terrible. It's terrible. I'll get into that later. But and the other show, which is another, I got hooked on it when I reviewed it, but Duck Dynasty. Can I just say, I'm a fan of Duck Dynasty. It's typically would not. I mean, I would reality show. Rednecks are great. Honey Boo Boo, here we come, right? But it's totally different. It's funny. It's got a great heart. It's not what you expect. And I could see why it's successful, because it's not like this kind of derogatory thing. It's actually a pretty charming, fun, funny show. So. And who knows, you could be a multimillionaire making duck calls. Who knew that? So TV that we've been watching and enjoying.
I've successfully avoided reality television in its entirety.
Yeah, good for you.
I don't intend to start now.
I hate it with the fire of a thousand suns, my friend, but this one does it for me.
To note that I have never seen an episode of Survivor. I have never seen an episode of American Idol.
That's impressive.
I don't intend to start now.
That's impressive. Well, actually, I'll take us into what we've been working on for the site, and I will talk about this Vikings documentary with Richard Karn. It's probably the dumbest, most inadvertently hilarious documentary I've seen. like, for example, Richard, he's the host, and he's like, it just involves him, like, he's sitting, there's one sequence, it's a segue, where he's sitting on a motorcycle for no reason. He's like reclining on a motorcycle holding a Viking helmet, and he's talking about how, what happened to the Vikings, and he said, well, like, the Minnesota Vikings, sometimes they lose to the Raiders. And that's how. You know,
except it's not true.
Yeah, right. That never happens. And then there's just, I love this. There's this crazy scene where there's some, like, basically it's Richard Karn and stupid doing stupid stuff. Then it's footage from, like, old Gladiator Viking movies, you know, probably public domain Italian movies, you know. Mm-hmm. And then there's like the worst, saddest reenactments you will ever see. Like, you know, just dudes and handcrafted mail, right, and paper mache. It's terrible. But in between this stuff, Richard Karn shows up with these things. My favorite is all of a sudden he's in swim trunks on a surfboard in front of a blue screen with a Viking ship behind him.
What?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's all I got for you. So, yeah, so that's pretty dumb. Pretty dumb. But beyond that, I don't think, I'm trying to think of actually the last, did I talk about the Hobbit Blu-ray? Have I talked about that?
I don't think you talked about the Blu-ray.
I did not. I don't think so. You think so, or you do not think so?
I do not think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So, Hobbit Blu-ray, got the pleasure of reviewing that. I've kind of on record here saying that's my favorite movie of the year. Looks awesome. Sounds awesome. As the standard issue, you know, there's an extended edition coming with all the bells and whistles. So, you get another disc with like 2 hours of video blogs, but they're just the stuff you've seen already. They're kind of recycled video blogs. I mean, it's good info, but there's no commentaries or anything. So, it's essentially the film, but it looks great, sounds great. And really getting me, like, really hoping North Korea doesn't launch nukes at us because I want to see how he wraps up all this stuff. So,
yeah, I picked up the Blu-ray too, and the visuals, it looks really amazing.
It really does.
And you can, all the detail and the color and everything, it's just incredible.
Yeah, I know, Eric, you didn't think the CGI was particularly impressive. I think it looks better in high definition, actually. So,
yeah, okay. That's
for good. What it's worth, good. I think it jumped good. Out to me. It's like, oh, this, you know, this looks even better. So anyway, good stuff. Really, really been enjoying that movie. So, yeah, that's about that. And Duck Dynasty, but I won't bore you. So, Merrick, what do you got?
Let's see. I reviewed the first season of Ripper Street from BBC. This show, you might remember, I'm something of an amateur Jack the Ripper expert.
I did not know that.
Oh, yes. And so, well, I guess not expert, but researcher.
Enthusiast.
Anyway, this show takes place in 1 year after the Jack the Ripper murders, and the cops are trying to, you know, fight crime in the streets of London all the time, wondering if the Ripper is going to return. It's like, you know, like you mentioned, the Vikings, it's that sort of a similar type of show where they take an era of history and do this sort of gritty, modernized retelling of it. So, you know, the Vikings and, you know, there was Deadwood and so on. And now it's the Victorian era's turn with Ripper Street. But it's pretty good. So it's basically your cop show type of thing. And each one of the cops has his own specific skill. So the main guy, Reed, he's the brains of the group. And then Jackson is the one who's good with firearms. And Drake is the bare-knuckle brawler.
Excellent.
And the three of them go out and they fight crime in London. So it's good times.
Yeah. So recommended then, huh?
I'd say so, yeah. I had a good time with it. I'm not so sure it's quite up there with the best of British TV, like, say, Sherlock or whatever, but sure. But it was very good.
All right. Nice. Eric?
Well, it's been a few weeks. Up on the site now is my review of the latest Mystery Science Theater set. I may have mentioned it on the podcast before. It's great. Check it out. And this week I'm reviewing a CGI animated family movie called A Monster in Paris, directed by the guy who did Shark Tale, produced, I'm pretty sure, by Luc Besson, who I think produces everything.
Yes.
and it's an odd duck. I'll give it a lot of credit for not being, you know, pop culture heavy at all. I'm trying to kind of get my head around it because it's clearly animated with the English voices in mind, and this is the English version that I had put out by Shout Factory. Although as I understand it, it came out in France to, you know, did pretty well. You know, it's obviously set in Paris in the early 20th century. But it was obviously made with English in mind. And anyway, it's pretty good. I think it's better than I expected it to be, for, you know, a CGI animated movie that wasn't made by one of the big studios. It's got pretty good music. Sean Lennon actually does, one of the voices and some of the singing. And it's a story of, an inventor and a friend of his who runs a film projector, and they, kind of stumble onto this, or they go into this lab, and through a lab accident, they create this giant flea, that can sing, and he's taken as a monster, but he's actually, you know, a kind-hearted soul, and they have to protect him from this, scheming, bureaucrat and all this kind of, you know, fairly normal stuff, but it comes together pretty well, and the set's pretty nice. It's got a Blu-ray and a DVD, and it's got 3D, and it's got all this kind of stuff. So, Chef Factory puts out good stuff. It's worth checking out.
Nice. All right, Daryl.
Two very different things. The first is the Criterion release of Robert Bresson's A Man Escaped, which is a very slow-moving but incredibly tense prison break drama. It's incredibly slow. But by the end of it, everything – the slowness builds on itself. And by the end of it, when he actually escapes – because spoiler alert is in the title – he it's phenomenally tense. Like as much as any prison break drama or bank heist drama or anything you're going to see. It's incredibly tense, and I recommend it, but it is very, very slow, very deliberate.
But how would you describe the pacing?
Slow.
Okay.
Deliberate.
Gotcha, excellent.
The other is not slow nor deliberate, and I only recommend it sparingly, but for fans of weird Japanese horror, Tormented is something that you folks should check out. The villain is a pink plushy bunny. It's by Takashi Shimizu, who was the guy behind Ju-on, The Grudge, who brought that over to the States and has done plenty of stuff. It's a 3D movie. I reviewed it, the 3D Blu-ray, which unfortunately doesn't work very well, at least on my system. It doesn't come together quite right. And I know I'm not screwed up because I've had others that do come together normally. But it begs to be seen in 3D, so if there's ever an incident or a time when it shows up at a 3D-capable theater, I highly recommend those people going to see it. There are some cool, very cool 3D effects, such as the little boy, obviously, and his mute sister, obviously. It's Japanese horror. go to a 3D movie, which turns out to be Shimizu's previous movie called Shock Labyrinth, which is a weird meta little thing that I appreciated. There's a little pink bunny in that, and the girl who's holding the bunny throws it at one point, and the bunny comes out of the 3D screen, so it's like 3D to the kid, and he catches it, and it becomes real in his thing, and there's some really cool effects like that in there that properly done on 3D would be very fun for, you know, at the very least, fans of really weird Japanese horror plus a giant pink bunny.
Yeah, good.
How are you gonna go?
That works. All right, nice. Well, we're gonna skip our little upcoming DVD releases because I don't think it's been updated quite yet. So we'll get right in to the final phase of our filibuster here. Ambush topics, you know how this works, so I won't go through it. Mac, why don't you kick us off?
Okay, our first topic. I don't think we've done this one before. And Dave, you kind of actually hinted at it already.
Nice.
It's Strange and Unusual Motorcycles.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to jump in before Dave does.
What are you going to take?
Well, I think I'm gonna have to go with from Warrior of the Lost World.
That's an excellent one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, not mine, but
motorcycle from. Boy, I'm trying to remember the name of the
motorcycle.
Does he have a
name? I don't know if he has a name.
Yeah, I'm gonna find out. But Mystery Science Theater did this movie. We saw it in its unripped form in college.
They picked up a copy. VHS cover. Of a man in a futuristic suit of armor escaping lasers.
And that is not in the movie at all.
It's not.
But poor.
I feel pretty proud of that fact, by the way.
Yeah, that we got that. Apparently I don't know if the motorcycle has a name, but it's controlled by an AI named Einstein.
Nice.
For what that's worth. So there you go. Einstein, the motorcycle.
All right, that's good. Huh? Or as Joe Bluth would call him, Steinberg.
Which is coming up in about 4 weeks now.
Oh, wow.
It's happening. That's right.
It's really happening.
All right. The one I was going to go with was Karate Robo Zobergor.
Yes.
Of course, we talked about him at length, but he always deserves another shout-out. He is, of course, the transforming robot/motorcycle who has teamed up with his brother fighting crime because his brother's spirit is in this robot. Remember, his brother died because he was breastfed by his father. So, great movie.
You need to get him together with the pink bunny from Tormented.
Yes, and then the executive koala. Who's next?
Well, I've got one, but I don't want to. There's a good one in this previous episode of Doctor Who, but I don't want to spoil it for Mac.
Wow.
Well, it's Mac's ambush topic. Maybe he needs to reap the whirlwind.
Well, then he will. Oh, so
all right, go for it.
Okay. Well, in this episode, at one point, without giving up too much to you, Mac, I'll try to keep it as spoiler free. But when danger hits, it turns out, which there's actually indication of previously, but the TARDIS has a garage that has previously held a motor scooter from the 50s. This time, it has a pretty standard bike in it, but it is apparently a hover bike. And in order to get to the top of a giant building, skyscraper, he rides it up the side of the building with its with its anti-gravity capabilities.
Cool. Not bad. All right, Mac, what do you got?
Yeah, the TARDIS garage, that's where they used to keep Bessie, correct, in the old show?
Yeah, correct.
Got to throw out a Bessie reference whenever I can. For me, I'm still recovering from when I went through all of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies in a single weekend a couple weeks ago. And in Nightmare Part 5... there's a guy gets done in by. Was it Alice? No, it was. No, that's not the one he was in. Alice Cooper was in 6, right?
It was 6 that Alice Cooper was in.
I think so.
Was that the same one Roseanne Barr was in?
Yeah, that was Part 6.
Okay.
That was Freddy's Dead.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's the one with the power glove and all that. Yeah.
That's terrible.
But in Part 5, we have a guy who's on the motorcycle riding home. He falls asleep. And the motorcycle transforms into the Freddy cycle.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
So all the, tubes and wires come out and dig into the guy's skin, and it turns into this big, metal face out in the front that says something. And I always wonder, why was there never an action figure of the Freddy cycle?
Do they do action figures at all?
They had Freddy action. They had Freddy himself.
There's been a bunch of Freddy toys. There was the girl who turned into the cockroach in Part 4. They
made actual toys you play with or just collectibles?
Well, they're action figures, but yeah, most people will just display them.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Yeah, my Freddy versus Chewbacca fights that I had as a kid.
Yeah.
So Johnny Depp action liquefying.
Although, really, yeah, if you're falling asleep while
playing with him in the sandbox, you might get a little worried.
The thing is, if you're falling asleep on your motorcycle, I don't think Freddy really needs to be involved.
That's true. Yeah, I think you'll take care of that yourself. So you. All right, Eric.
All right. Less than ideal movie experiences that you've had.
Ooh, that's a good one. I like revisiting this one.
Mine is from a long time ago. It's the first movie that I ever that I can remember ever truly hating, which is a long list now. But back then, I went. I was really excited going to the theater. I think I was in seventh grade. I want to say I was in seventh grade. Rode my bike to the theater to meet a friend of mine. Went to see Dances with Wolves. Even then, of course, today I would never watch that movie again. Today I would rebel and break my television.
I've never seen it. My wife desperately wants me to watch it, but all we have is the director's cut, which is like 4 hours long.
Oh god! But I rode my bike home from that angry.
Oh man!
And I was only 13, so God, what my 30-something. Mind would do if I deigned to watch that again would just be monstrous.
Well, see, Beowulf 3D IMAX experience, sitting next to three little punk kids. They kind of keep their traps shut. They kept, oohing and aahing and talking about Angelina Jolie's CGI breasts and would not shut up. And then they left, and I followed them out there, and they came back in, and I turned. And before my eyes, I turned into a crotchety old man. Said, these kids, I paid good money for this. These kids are ruining it. Like, I really gave it to them. They were actually apologetic. And they sat down, next to me. And I was like, I mean it. Shut up or something like that. Everybody quiet. I mean, it was $14 for that ticket, It's
like, and shutting up at the movie theater is not something that people should have issue with. Just shut up. We've all paid money.
Yes.
To get
wasn't that the night on a totally unrelated note? Someone slashed your tires and keyed your car.
Yeah, I totally remember. Flaming dog poop in my.
I remember that. Yeah.
Good night.
Yeah.
I guess mine was on. It would be on a similar vein as yours, Dave, because when they re-released Episode 1 in 3D like a year or so ago, I went and saw it, doing my due diligence as a Star Wars fan, and sat down, got on my 3D glasses. I was like, all right, here we go. Star Wars. It's gonna be spaceships and explosions and lightsabers in 3D. It's gonna be great. And everyone else in the theater came to this movie just to laugh at it and just to make fun of it and just, be mean to it.
Yeah.
So that was rather disheartening.
I think I supplied someone with a negative experience when me and my young stupid friends, we went to go see, it was like a church youth group outing. So we went to see a family friendly movie it was Homeward Bound, right? With the talking dogs.
Oh god.
Talking dogs.
Was it a dog and a cat?
Dog and a cat, yeah. I don't know, were they talking? I'm assuming they were talking.
Did they? I don't know.
It's like the telepathy thing. They just have voices.
I gotcha. The look who's talking, I guess. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we just stood up in the back, just like screaming and hooliganing. So I think I was repaid that in karma with these.
I would probably give you a pat on your young back for doing so in that movie.
I would immediately report to the authorities.
So, Dave, looking back now, do you think that Beowulf was really ruined by the experience? I mean, do you still hold that,
Little regard to do with the movie itself.
No, I understand, but is the fact that it was Beowulf and not Dark Knight or something, make you less angry in retrospect?
I guess so.
And does the fact that it was only $13, which I assume is the price for a matinee these days, make it seem...
It was real money, and they were real douchebags. So, that's timeless. So, yeah.
I've seen the t-shirt, yeah. So, my turn, okay. Well, mine is much gentler than any of yours. Last week while I was While I was recovering, I was looking on Netflix to see what, you know, trying to find something to watch, and saw that a movie I'd never seen but always meant to was expiring soon. So I checked out Old Boy and started up and saw that they only had the dubbed version, which I normally would not choose. The dubbing was okay, not the best. I watched the movie anyway, and I, you know, I don't know if I can say I enjoyed it, but it's a good movie for all of the insanity that ensues. But, yeah, I think, you know, the dubbed version of any movie is not going to be my first choice ever. So it's too bad that was the only one available. So not terrible, but, as I said, less than ideal.
Yes.
This is one of the least anticipated American remakes that I can imagine.
The one apparently now that with I actually Will Smith. Know. Yeah, now that I actually know what it is, it's kind of hard to imagine anyone remaking it.
The other two
I can't picture that either.
Yeah. The other two are the remake of Hellraiser, and which Clive Barker has completely denounced, and the long, long talked about remake of Suspiria, which is my favorite horror movie, David Wallace Green? David, what's his name? The guy that made Pineapple Express.
Oh.
David Gordon Green or something like that.
Yeah, I can't imagine that either.
He said he wants to expand on the story, and my response is, what story? it's not really about that. So between among those three, they're all kind of abominable. But Old Boy just seems senseless, especially when you put Will Smith in.
Ah.
Man.
All right. Daryl, why don't you go ahead?
All right. Well, I have been, for the last 36 hours or so, mourning the death of Grindhouse King, foreign Grindhouse King, I guess I should say, Jess Franco, who made hundreds of movies during his career. A movie that you know is terrible, but that you still love.
Yeah. So I'm going to try to dodge the usual suspects here. I guess that's a challenge, right? Okay, I'm going to go with Cliffhanger.
Okay.
But do you think that's terrible?
Pretty terrible.
But objectively speaking, Rennie Harlan.
It's pretty terrible.
It's pretty terrible, but I love that movie.
Didn't Rennie Harlan get his start on one of those Nightmare on Elm Street movies?
Yes, Part 4. That was his first American film.
Okay. Anyway, go on, Dave. I'm sorry.
Yeah, just super violent. Oh, everyone's choose scenery like crazy. The heroes make really dumb decisions, like, you know, Sylvester Stallone's getting chased by these heavily armed guards with night vision, and he builds a snowman for some reason. I don't remember this.
Really nice snowman.
They're like right on his heels, and he builds a snowman just to taunt them by putting like the homing device in there. And then he gets shot up. Eric Whalen, played by John Lithgow, who just tears through scenery like
he can do it. Yeah. I remember really liking the opening scene of that movie where he drops his girlfriend.
Yeah, into the green screen of death, yes.
Yeah, and I don't know if the effect holds up because it's been since it came to HBO that I saw it.
Yeah, it doesn't. There's some great, I reviewed the Blu-ray somewhere, and I think I espoused my love for it despite its objective shortcomings, but there's just the guy who just monologues until Stallone pile drives him into a stalactite, you know, that, they just great moments that make zero sense. So, and it's just super violent 90s. I don't know. Love Cliffhanger. Objectively terrible, though. And I would put, since I'm on the roll, I'm going to add as a companion piece of that, Firestorm starring Howie Long.
I believe
we tackled that, right?
Yes,
yeah, we did. Talked about that, yeah.
Firestorm. So, another objectively terrible movie, but Howie Long's blank face, his blank stare always wins me over.
Well, you know, he's the new Brian Bosworth.
Let's see. Well, I already mentioned Phantom Menace, so probably shouldn't go back there again. So how about the Dungeons and Dragons movie? And when was it?
I never saw that.
It, the cheese is just very thick.
It looked like it. And I'm an old Dungeons and Dragons player. and just couldn't get my head around watching.
Yeah, this might not be the movie for you then.
probably not.
Yeah.
What's fascinating is, okay, it's not a good movie at all, but it's very enthusiastic. Yeah. And you can tell that they've really like put all their passion into the movie. And even though it's not very good, that enthusiasm and that, you know, they were really into what they were doing. So there's that. And but yeah, it's not very good. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Yeah, it's really sort of small in scope when Dungeons and Dragons as a subject should be large in scope. And but it's just kind of, and it's just that sort of that unintentional comedy, that sort of cheesiness. You talk about over-the-top villains. You got Jeremy Irons doing his big line with, I don't know the exact words, but fire will rain from the skies, and he stretches out the eye in that skies. And yeah, so it's just total camp. I'm not going to defend it. I'm just going to say it's total camp, but I'm proud to own the DVD.
Nice.
And the deleted scenes on the DVD has really important key scenes where, like, we learn the characters' names. You know?
Oh, that's good.
And the deleted scene where the characters introduce one another and we learn their names, that was deleted.
So. Eric?
Boy, a lot of the ones I'm thinking of are ones that I watched a lot as a kid but probably have not seen since. And I could say that I, you know, really love them because I remember wearing out VHS copies of them. Some of them are really terrible, like, I'm sad to say, the Brady Bunch Christmas movie and stuff like that. But I'm gonna go with one that only Dave and I have seen, and that's blanking on the name. Voyage of the Rock Aliens, the Great Voyage of the Rock Aliens.
Great Voyage of the Rock Aliens.
I mean, you know, objectively terrible, but man, is that a great movie?
Hugely entertaining. Like,
oh, so good.
Hugely entertaining.
great music.
Great music, absolutely. I mean,
ridiculous.
Really,
so good.
Like I know I've said this again over and over again, but why is it not out on optical disc format yet?
It is, but not in our country. I think there's a German version.
Yeah, really? The Germans have a 13th Warrior Blu-ray too.
The Germans have everything.
Germans have everything.
So
control
lucky.
Over the Eurozone too. So yeah, but that is a great. If you could find that somehow, if that ever makes it to Netflix,
it was so great. Which is why it was great to see it as one of the included. Trailers and Trailer
yes.
War.
Yeah, definitely. Another one of those random VHS purchases that just really wielded gold.
Really just paid dividends. And, you know, for every Deadline and Monster High, we got a Voyage of the Rock Aliens or
War of the Lost
World. Yeah.
Stuff. Nice, Daryl.
All right, so I would have gone with a Jess Franco movie, except that even though I watch every one that comes out on DVD that I haven't seen, I'm always bored, so I'm not going to. But I still watch them. So, and I should know better, but nonetheless. So I'm not going with one of those, even though I'm still mourning him. I am going with The Beast, which I have mentioned before, which was remade. Dave knows, or not remade, but. Sort of remade as The Beast in Space.
Yeah.
Which we're very familiar with.
Fortunately.
Right. The Beast is an awful, awful, awful period movie, period erotic movie about a beast.
And that is pushing the word erotic.
It's erotic in the most disgusting sense of the word.
I mean, they found the most pasty, out of shape place.
It's the same woman. The star is the same woman in Beast in Space as in The Beast.
Well, I know her name, Sherpa something.
Yeah, Sherpa.
Sherpa Lane, right?
Sherpa Lane, yeah, that's it. Sherpa nice. Lane, Sherpa Lane.
Sherpa, yeah. Yeah, she's not a Sherpa. She has not ascended Mount Everest.
But she is extremely she's extremely pale, and there's this extended scene in it where the beast, as beast and not as man with tail, the beast is chasing her through the woods, and it's a constant It's basically an exercise on how many things she can get caught on, to slowly over about 15 minutes, tear all of her clothes off, and then what happens next is maybe the most disgusting thing that I've ever seen in a movie. and I will not say it here because it is not for for broad audiences. But what I will say is that if somebody comes over to my house who asks me to see for me to show them something weird,
yeah,
it is my go-to piece.
The Beast?
The Beast. It's not just that scene. The whole movie is absolutely – it's insane and awful and absolutely disgusting.
I kind of want to see it now.
Oh, you should. You should. Ah. It's disgusting. Don't see The Beast in space. It's not very good. But neither is space. The Beast.
But you're going to deny yourself the Uranus milk.
You will deny yourself the Uranus milk. But with just the regular Beast, you get period costumes and genuinely one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. And I've seen some disgusting things.
Okay, I'm going to take us home real quick because I got no good ideas and we're getting long. So the Knicks just won their 10th game in a row just now. So
good for them.
The number 10. There you go, the number 10.
Hmm. Whatever. I feel like I should have seen this at some point, but I've never seen the Bo Derek Dudley Moore movie, which I think is just called 10.
10, yes.
It is. It's really bad.
All right, then. I guess it's okay that I didn't see it.
It's really, really bad. I mean, if you like Bo Derek movies, then I guess go to town. But
was she in Scott Pilgrim versus the World? I like that one.
No, right.
I guess I don't like Bo Derek movies. Never mind.
Yeah, it's really awful.
That's an attractive woman for having two male names. You know?
It's true. Although I'm trying to remember if it's 10 where she has the really tight braids.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. She's that's awful. Really the famous thing about the movie. She's running down the beach and the braids are.
Yeah, and that's almost as bad as Margaret Houlihan from Nash's super tight perm in the later seasons. Man, I was going to go with Hellraiser 10 because I thought there were 10, but it turns out there's only 9.
Oh, no. Well, that's what the remake's for.
Yeah, I've already talked about that. I can't use it.
All right, fine. I'll pick the Ten Commandments.
Okay, good.
Good old Chuck Heston hamming it up.
That's right. Just recently for Easter.
Oh, that's, yeah, okay. You know, I remember seeing that as a little kid, not really understanding the context, and just seeing, like, the hail falling from the sky and the various special effects, the pillar of fire, and thinking it was just this awesome action movie, and not really understanding what it was that I was seeing. I just thought it was, like, some kind of big fantasy. Years later, I saw it again and, you know, got it, and it was less awesome as a teenager than it was when I was, like, 5. But still, it's the Ten Commandments. It's a classic. What can I say?
There you go. Who are we waiting on? Me? Is it me?
No, it's me.
Oh.
This has happened before.
This has happened before. It will happen again.
Yes, I'm sure it will. Well, then I am going to go with the 10th season of The Simpsons, possibly the last, which was actually worth watching.
All right.
I think I might have
okay,
that.
What happened in season 10?
Anything particular? Anything specific?
I'd have to look it up.
All right.
Research. Yeah, we already talked about that.
Yeah, that's true. We don't do the show prep. All right, for me, I'm just going to go with the uneven but sporadically hilarious movie, The Ten.
The Ten, yeah. I thought of that as soon as Max said Ten Commandments.
Yeah. But so, uneven and sporadically entertaining, I would guess, highlighted by an epic competition between neighbors over buying CAT scan machines and a really disturbing makeout between Winona Ryder and a puppet, I believe, correct?
So, that's what I was trying.
Yes. So, uneven, sporadically entertaining. Kind of like this podcast, which is now over. So thank you for tuning in, welcoming us back. FridayPillbuster@DVDVerdict.com is email. And with that, let's call this a podcast, Mac.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.